Laura Bates says that the tipping point for her came after a particularly difficult week filled with several harassment incidents, from being catcalled on the street one evening to being groped on the bus the next. Those experiences led her to create the Everyday Sexism Project in 2012 in an effort, as she writes, to talk about sexism, equality, and women's rights in a modern society that perceives itself to have achieved gender equality. Through Twitter and her website, she collected experiences from over 80,000 women and men around the world, and now her book, Everyday Sexism, looks at why normalized sexism affects women's equal participation in society and argues that women should not tolerate it. It's published by Thomas Dunn Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought Laura Bates to our show. And we invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Have you experienced casual sexism at work, with friends? Have you been catcalled on the street? How do you react? And how did it make you feel? You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Laura, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
How do you define casual or normalized sexism?
Well, I use the term every day when I set the project up for two reasons, really. Partly because this really is impacting on women's lives on a daily basis, and partly because it has become so normalized in our society that we don't really even notice it anymore. So I think I would define it as something that goes unnoticed, unchecked, uncommented on. And because of that, it becomes very difficult to challenge. Because if you challenge something that everybody else is just sort of letting go by, then you're the one who is seen as the prude, as being uptight, as making a fuss about nothing. And I wanted to try and challenge that perception that much of sexism is just normal and it's just the way things are.
Why do people often react to complaints of sexism with phrases like, stop making a fuss, you're overreacting, you need to learn to take a compliment or a joke?
Yes, that's so common. I think there are two reasons. I think the first reason is that normalization. If you live in a society where it is just normal to be walking down the street and to hear someone shouting at a woman, making a comment that's explicit about her body, if we live in a society where for girls, by the time they're 16, almost all of them have experienced a guy either exposing himself in front of them on the subway or rubbing himself up behind them, touching them on the bus, then you grow up in a world that teaches you this is just normal. And all of that helps to contribute to that idea that someone that speaks out is then being difficult. But I think it also comes from the idea that people see these as isolated incidents. So usually the person who says it's just a compliment, stop making a fuss, is somebody who hasn't experienced this themselves. It's usually a man who perhaps hasn't experienced this or witnessed it. And so he's seeing it through this completely different lens of this one-off experience and doesn't necessarily recognize the cumulative impact of all of these incidents together, or indeed how the kind of wider structural gender imbalance around us in our society can impact on those smaller incidents.
A listener, Danielle, on Twitter just wrote in to say, when have I not experienced casual sexism? But it's also being dismissed as political correctness. Even liberal comedians in this country have complained about the way college audiences have reacted to sexist jokes.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a really fascinating time at the moment because there is this really great wave of feminism. There are women all over the world and all over the US who are standing up to this, who are challenging it. And particularly on college campuses, you're seeing this incredible revolution led by young women, led by survivors. And I think that makes people very uncomfortable. It makes people scared that they're being accused of something. It makes people concerned about that kind of issues around freedom of speech and political correctness. And that's really interesting. I saw a fantastic experiment this morning, actually, that someone had shared on Facebook, where they had programmed their browser to replace the term political correctness in headlines with treating other people with respect. And it generated some hilarious headlines, you know, treating other people with respect will lead to the end of the world, says, Donald Trump or whoever it was. And I thought that that was quite nice because I think this is something that is often seen as a threat, but in reality, it's just about people asking to be treated as human beings, essentially.
Is it often a case where women are so accustomed to gender-based prejudice that it sometimes fails to even register with them?
Yes, I think that can definitely be true. One of the fascinating things when I set the project up was that I started by just going to women and girls and saying, have you ever experienced sexism? And it was this fascinating effect where you could be standing in a circle of women and several of them would say, oh, no, I haven't. I've never experienced sexism. And you'd say, that's wonderful. And then another woman would say, well, on my way here today, a guy in the subway sort of said, all right, darling, smile. And I was clearly reading my book and he wouldn't take no for an answer. And all these other women would look up and say, oh, well, yeah, that's happened to me. And then another woman would say, well, you know, I was in the office and I was about to present at a meeting when somebody from the head office walked in and looked me up and down and said, oh, I'll have coffee with two sugars, please. And then the other women said, well, yeah, I mean, I've had that kind of situation all the time. So I think there's certainly a sense of normalization that it becomes so tiring and so ingrained. And the response is so difficult when you do react that many women do just get used to kind of putting up with it.
Do you think it's generational? Estelle from Brooklyn wrote to our show page, the times I was the object of predatory males, I froze like a deer in the headlights. And now that I'm 73, I look back with horror and chagrin at what I tolerated. I explain this to my granddaughter, hoping that she'll be able to extricate herself from situations that I couldn't when I was young.
Well, you know, I think it's so sad. We hear these stories from women of different generations saying how horrified they are to see their children and grandchildren experiencing what they went through and saying, why hasn't anything changed? I think that certainly this is something that is affecting very young girls. What's horrifying is that many of our stories are from girls in their school uniform when this first starts to happen to them. So I don't think it's dying out, but I would definitely say that we hear from so many women who make that comment, I froze. I always thought that I would fight back. I blame myself. Why didn't I say anything? And I think it's so important to say that that is a completely natural and normal reaction. We know that the body freezes in situations of perceived threat. We know that there's a panic. And really, I think all of us are trained into looking at the victim in these circumstances. What did she do? How did you react? How do women cope with this? And we very rarely ask, let's stop this happening in the first place. How could we do that? Why are men doing this? We don't educate men. We don't say we should be talking to our grandsons and our sons about respecting women. And I think it's time that we flip that around.
I'm speaking with Laura Bates, who writes regularly for The Guardian, The Independent, New Statesman, Time magazine. Her book, Everyday Sexism, the project that inspired a worldwide movement, is published by St. Martin's Griffin in the Thomas Dunn Books imprint. This is WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Ledit Lopate. And we're going to take some calls. But before we take those calls, a reminder that people sometimes say things that you can't say on the air. So could you please be careful with your language when you're reporting on experiences that you've had? Natalie from Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So one experience I had is in Montclair, I was walking down the street with my dad, and someone just called out the window to my dad and said, your girl has a nice butt, with worse language. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I don't know, like it was so awkward, and like I'm very vocal in how much I hate catcalling, and I'm very loud in my feminism, and like I'm just like, if people catcall me, like I will stop and stare them down and like.
Well, how did your father react?
He looked down and was silent, and then said, he just like said very quietly, like, that wasn't very nice. And like I was like, nope, it's not. It happens every day. Enjoy it.
Laura, you want to respond to that? Because often part of the story is how the male who's witnessing this also responds.
That's true, and probably that must be a really horrible situation to witness it happening to someone that you know and care about. For many men that we hear from, actually, that's a really eye-opening experience, because it does often happen when you're on your own. It very often happens in isolated scenarios, so that can be a real moment for men, and I'm sure that conversation of hearing his daughter say, "This happens to me every day," will have been really, really shocking. It's in a horrible way. It is one way to kind of open men's eyes to it. And when people say, you know, "Don't make a fuss, it's not that big a deal," you do sometimes think, well, can you imagine this happening to your daughter, to your mother, to your loved one? We shouldn't have to say that, because we shouldn't have to humanize women to men by imagining if they were an appendage of theirs. But, you know, I think that is really powerful, and I'm so sorry that happened.
I just heard a report in which it was the kind of harassment we're talking about, the catcalls, were put into two separate categories. One, a bunch of guys sitting around. The catcalls there were seen as more like a peer thing, guys with each other. And then there is an individual catcall when you're walking down the street and somebody says something about your butt, or says to your father that your daughter has a nice butt.
Well, I think that that's really interesting, because I do think it's a much more varied problem than we tend to think of when we discuss something like catcalling. We think of it as one sort of issue, but it can be really varied. We know, for example, that for women of color and LGBT people, it's often escalated. They're more likely to experience it. They're more likely to experience threats and escalations of the violence. We also know that women who try to reject it find that it escalates, that if somebody has the audacity to say, "Actually, my body isn't yours to comment on," in a public space, that they often then see violence as a result. And I know two women in the U.S. have been killed in recent years, one shot dead in Detroit and one had her throat slashed in Queens, because they simply rejected the advances of street harassers. So I think it is really important to say that this is something that takes many forms. And while it's often dismissed as harmless or just a compliment, I think that those situations really belie the fact that it is about power, and it's about control, and it's about a public space and carving out roles within that public space for who is in control and whose body is there as an object for others. And that's why it's really important that we challenge this within the broader spectrum, I think, of gender-based violence.
Didn't you receive threats after you put your Everyday Sexism Project site up?
I did, and it's interesting because it's a very simple website. It just asks people to share their experiences of witnessing or experiencing any kind of gender inequality, and we receive submissions from people of all genders and welcome those. It doesn't exclude men. It never for a second set out to vilify all men. It was very much about saying this is a problem that affects all of us. It disproportionately affects women, we know that, but it also, sexism is bad for men. It tells men that they can't talk about their emotions, that they can't cry, that they can't be involved in raising their children. This is about everybody. It's about people standing up to prejudice, not about men against women. And so I was quite shocked at the level of the vitriol that, from within a couple of weeks of starting the project, I was receiving and still receive on a daily basis death threats, rape threats, long emails from people describing which seven knives they will use to disembowel me with and what order they'll do it in. I mean, just incredibly graphic and very, very scary. And I think, sadly, we are moving into a period where I don't know a single woman working in this area who hasn't experienced that kind of abuse.
And what do you think is driving that kind of anger, that level of anger? Do you think the men are feeling threatened? Are they defending their privilege? Or is it just that you can do that kind of thing online, you couldn't do it in the past?
Well, I think that we do live in a world in which the message is sent very clearly that the way to silence women is through violence. I mean, we know that one in four women in the U.S. experiences domestic violence. This is an epidemic. This is a massive problem in our society. And we do send that message to men. If you want a woman to shut up, you hit her, or you threaten to hit her. And I think we're seeing that spilling over online. But I think that the root of it is perhaps a sense of panic. I think when you talk about gender equality, it's very difficult for some people to get past the idea that in order to be talking about rectifying something for women, holding women up, supporting women, you must be taking something away from men. And I think that that leads to some very scared, knee-jerk reactions of, I just don't want this to happen. I just don't want to have this conversation. I can't cope with the implication that there's something wrong that I might have done, or that I might have benefited from this in some way. And so the response there is as a knee-jerk reaction to try and shut the conversation down by silencing women in the way that people best know how.
Where were the stories you were receiving on the Everyday Sexism Project coming from? All over the world?
They've come from all over the world. We have a very large number from the United States, about 20,000 from the US. They've come from people of all different ages, different races and ethnicities, disabled and non-disabled, religious and non-religious. It's incredible when you look at the spread. It ranges from a woman in an office being told to sit on her boss's lap if she wants her Christmas bonus, to a church reverend constantly being asked if there's a man available to perform the wedding or the funeral, to a dad being congratulated for babysitting his own children, to a 13-year-old girl who's been told by her own family that she shouldn't talk about her rape because she was wearing a short skirt and she brought it on herself, to an 80-year-old woman who writes, I have too many stories to say in this small box. Here are some highlights arranged by decade. And really from all around, so from a woman in Mexico whose university lecturer told her, Caidita te ves más bonita, you look prettier when you shut up. From an Asian woman who was on campus with her university boyfriend in the UK when people started shouting at him asking if she was a male or a bride, or a disabled woman who was asked to do a pole dance around her walking stick, or a transgender woman being hounded from a public bathroom. They're incredibly varied, and I think they really demonstrate that intersection of different kinds of prejudice as well, and how we have to be tackling this alongside racism and homophobia and disablism at the same time.
Have you heard in Britain that the American Bar Association declared it professional misconduct to discriminate against or harass opposing counsel, or anyone for that matter, in the course of practicing law? You can't call your opposing counsel honey or dear.
I have heard that, and I think that, you know, that might seem like something that's relatively small. It's the kind of exactly the kind of thing that we would get people complaining about, saying, oh, for goodness sake, that's ridiculous. But if you think about it, a courtroom is the perfect example of an atmosphere where those kind of very, very small gendered slights can have a real impact. If you have a jury sitting there listening to evidence being made from both sides, and they have a prosecution and a defense lawyer, and one of those lawyers is female and is being constantly undermined by being called sweetie and darling or honey or whatever it is, that's very important in a situation where they are making up their minds depending on which of those persons they trust the most. So I think that's a great example of why this stuff does matter, and the impact can be so much bigger than perhaps the initial perceived problem.
My guest is Laura Bates. Her book, Everyday Sexism, is published by St. Martin's Press Griffin in the Thomas Dunn Books imprint. We will continue our conversation. Take a lot of calls, by the way. All of our lines are full, but our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. We'll be back right after this. And we are back with Laura Bates, her book, Everyday Sexism, the project that inspired a worldwide movement. It is published by St. Martin's Griffin in the Thomas Dunn Books imprint. And we have a lot of calls. We try to get to as many of them as we can, starting with Lacey from the Upper West Side. Hi, you're on the air. The Upper East Side, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I moved you across town.
You did mention schoolgirls talking about how they get harassed. I grew up in New York City. I went to a private school with uniforms. Taking the subway in the morning was literally a battlefield. I wore shorts under my skirt because I was touched all the time. It got so bad that our school actually brought in a policewoman to speak to us about getting groped on the subway. And basically what she told us was to get off, to mention it to a train conductor, and to really not do anything about it. And I kind of, you know, looking back on it, it's been 10 years. And if I had a daughter that happened to, I mean, I would tell her to yell it out in the subway that if you're in a schoolgirl uniform and you're getting groped by someone on the train, I would hope that other people would come to your defense.
She could also stomp on his foot, don't you think?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, there were things that I did in high school, but I never felt safe.
Now, let's talk about that for a moment. We mentioned earlier witnesses. If somebody witnesses mm-hmm. that kind of sexism, you're on the subway, should you get involved? People are often afraid to get involved because the groper can be seen as threatening.
Well, I think it depends on the situation. I think that obviously every situation is different, and I would never say that there is a one-size-fits-all approach. Of course, personal safety has to come first. But I think that actually in a subway-type situation where there are lots of people around, where it's often well-lit, that is often a situation where people are able to step in. And I would really encourage this line of conversation, that we talk about what witnesses can do. If you see this, you should say something. You should step in. Because it is much easier in that situation as a witness to step in and say something than it is as a terrified 14-year-old schoolgirl with some strange man's hand on you in that moment to think of what to say, to do anything. You know, we cannot be expecting victims to be the ones to resolve these situations. But what we have to do is send the message to the person doing it that they will not get away with it and that it is socially abhorrent. Because for me, that's the real clue. And I think this is partly because you mentioned that when I set the project up, I was groped on a bus that week. And what happened was that a man sat next to me and he put his hands and on my leg. And then before I knew what was happening, he had run his hand up my leg and grabbed my crotch. And I moved away from him and said very loudly on the bus, "This man just groped me." I was on the phone to my mom at the time. So I was telling her, "I'm on the bus. This man has just groped me." And everybody on the bus looked out of the window. Mm. Nobody stepped in. Nobody said a word. And it sent two really powerful messages that day. It sent me the message as a young woman, this is your problem. You deal with this. This is life. No one is reacting. This is not remarkable. But it also sent him the message, this is fine. You can get away with this. You go on and do this again. Because even when someone says what's happening, people aren't even remotely bothered. And I think that that's what we have to change. That's where this normalization comes from. People not responding, not helping.
A listener on Twitter, I don't know if it's a man or a woman, feels that there's a difference between whistling at women on the subway and actually touching them.
Yeah, I think that's true. This is a spectrum of behavior. We are talking about a continuum here, and it starts with the verbal advances, the unwanted comments on someone's appearance, which I think implicitly is what a wolf whistle really is. And yes, if somebody is groping you, if somebody is touching between your legs or grabbing your breast or stroking your legs, that is actually a form of sexual assault, at least under UK law. But I think what I would say is that while, of course, they are different and no one is saying that they are the same thing or have necessarily the same impact, I would also say that I believe they are connected. I believe that it is the same power imbalance behind both. I believe that if we turn a blind eye to wolf whistling, if we say actually it's not that big a deal if you just comment on a woman's breast, then we are opening a doorway that leads to that kind of normalization that suggests, well, maybe I'll just touch them one day as well. And I think that we have to say at some point, enough is enough. Women are people. We're not going to treat them as second-class citizens anymore in any way.
Chuck from Suffolk County, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Apropos of the topic right on right now, back in the early 70s, I was walking in the Lower East Side with a fellow college student, and someone walked by and inappropriately touched her. And when she told me, I turned around, the guy was already long gone, and I didn't see anything. And it was such a frustrating and embarrassing situation that I had nothing I could do to protect my friend. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't about to go chasing after him and start a fist fight because it wasn't up to that level, but it's still something that bothers me to this day.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I think in that situation, the very fact that you were there and that you presumably signaled to your friend that you were shocked and frustrated and supported her, while it sounds very simple, does make a difference, because we hear from thousands of women who experience this kind of thing or worse. And when they tell someone what's happened, someone close to them, usually a friend or even a partner or a family member, the response often is, well, it's just, you know, it's not that big a deal. Or why are you making a fuss? Or what did you do to deserve it? Were you looking at him? What were you wearing? So actually, even what you did do in that circumstance where your options were limited probably will have been helpful in validating her feeling that it wasn't acceptable.
Haven't we been seeing some obvious examples of casual sexism during the Olympics? BBC reporter John Inverdale praised the tennis player Andy Murray for being the first person to win two Olympic medals in tennis. Then Murray noted that Venus and Serena Williams have won four each.
Four each. Yes,
that's
correct.
And then they comment on the attractiveness of female athletes. They're who's the prettiest gymnast. There was talk about the sexiest ever Olympic opening ceremony, with somebody saying there'll be lots of nearly naked women doing the samba. Oh,
that's right, yes. And also we had somebody commenting that they criticizing a gymnast because they felt that her leotard didn't complement her skin tone, which I would say is an example of sexism and racism. We had the same presenter, John Inverdale, actually, a few days earlier, was presenting a medal for rugby sevens to the men's rugby sevens, or he was presenting during that ceremony, rather. And he said, and of course, this is the first time ever that an Olympic medal has been awarded for this sport, for rugby sevens. Although a couple of days earlier, the women's rugby sevens medals had been awarded. It's quite extraordinary. There was also, an American athlete who won a medal, and the Chicago Tribune printed the headline, "Wife of a Bears linesman wins medal." There was another athlete who won a medal, and as the camera panned across into the crowd over to her husband, the presenter said, "And there's the man who's responsible." Yes, it's been really, really eye-opening, I think. And this is not the first time. We saw very similar coverage at the last Olympics, but I'm heartened that at least we're discussing it this time around. There has been a real outpouring. People are starting to notice these smaller instances and put them together. And it's a really good example of the way that women in the public eye are treated as women first and foremost, and then as whatever their profession is, a distant second. We see this as well very clearly in the treatment of female politicians, in the criticisms of Hillary for being too frumpy or showing too much cleavage, she can't win, and criticisms of Hillary's voice being too shrill or too bossy or too demanding, the kind of criticisms that just don't get levied at political men. And it's an enormous double standard, but it's only when you look at all these cases alongside each other that you start to see how much it adds up.
Let's bring Adriana from New Jersey into this conversation. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Lana Lope. Hi. So my story kind of goes back a couple of years when I was student teaching up in Boston. And in this kind of situation, I had a seventh grader kind of suggest to me that I should perform oral sex on him in front of his friends. So with that shock, I was like, immediately, that's a very kind of problematic place to be in it. And I really had no idea how to handle that. And I was really kind of hurt and bothered by it. You know, eventually I had reported it to the teacher that I was participating with. And later that day, I had called my father to tell him what had happened, because I was really bothered by this situation. And, my father is a fairly progressive person, but when I told him this, the initial reaction that he gave me was a chuckle and a laugh, as if boys will be boys, and, you know, this is kind of just, you know, a ludicrous thing that happens. And, you know, thankfully I was in this point and in this mindset where I was like, why are you laughing? This is not funny. And, you know, thankfully we had a really progressive conversation about, like, why it was not okay, and he realized why his reaction was problematic. But it's still something that kind of shocks me and that I have a problem with today, that we consistently have to justify why we feel offended by something like a seventh grader sexually harassing a full-grown adult, and why that's not ludicrous. Like, it's tiresome to have to explain why that's not funny.
Absolutely. I think that is so true, and it comes down to this complete difference in lived experience, that for many men, the idea of having to experience these things is just so distant from their day-to-day lives that the idea of it is something that they can't even really imagine. So I think that that's a really good example of the how tiring it can be to kind of have to constantly go through those things over and over.
Devon from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, thanks for taking my call. To piggyback on what you just said just now, I was dating a woman a while ago, and she frequently sort of explained to me what was happening when she would walk down the street, and it seemed a little, it just seemed crazy to me, because when I was out walking with her, you know, of course, I don't see any of this. So I once just sort of walked behind her for a few blocks, 30 or 40 feet behind. And I was shocked by sort of the just every day. And this was just kind of her trip through the West Village in the middle of the day. And I think they're, in a way, like people like me might be a huge part of the problem, because we sort of just kind of go through blissfully ignorant. I think we need help in some way to understand what's happening. And
Laura, what do you suggest that people like Devin can do, people who are sensitive to the situation?
Well, I mean, I'm really heartened to hear that, because I believe very strongly that this isn't, you know, there's a critical mass of men, a huge number of men who are in that situation. They wouldn't dream of behaving like this themselves, but because they just don't witness it, they don't know it's happening. And in a way, that's why I've written the book. That's why I started this project, because here are 100,000 people's experiences, mostly women's experiences, all in one place, where men can go and actually educate themselves and learn about these things and find out what's happening and what the impact is, without women to having to go through that emotional work of explaining and justifying it. So, I mean, that's one place that I would direct you straight away, to everydaysexism.com, or to have a look at the book. But also, I think that there is a very, very simple way to educate yourself about this, and it is, if you feel able to, and if they feel able to, just to go home tonight and talk to women in your life. Just ask them if they've ever experienced anything like this, and then sit down and probably be completely shocked and saddened for an hour. But it is such a strange thing that women experience this every single day, and many of us never tell anyone about the vast majority of these incidents, because we have been trained to think that it's normal.
But Laura, even when women do complain, as we've seen in the Fox News Roger Ailes case, often employers just look the other way, and sometimes the woman is even punished for having complained. We are pretty much out of time, but a reminder that we have a link to your website on our website, and we're going to keep this conversation going on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. The book is Everyday Sexism, the project that inspired a worldwide movement. It's published by St. Martin's Griffin in the Thomas Dunn Books imprint. And my great thanks to all of you who have called. I'm sorry I couldn't get to more of the calls, because we really have opened up a hornet's nest here. Thank you, Laura, so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.